Hello, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Justin Sloan.
And I'm Paul Zeidman, and I'd like to say hi to our special guest today, writer, director, all around Renaissance man, James Ridgely. James, thanks for showing up on the show today.
Hey, thanks for the introduction. Renaissance plays a key role.
Ooh, I like that tease. That's great. So what we usually do is we talk about anything we've been reading or watching lately of note. Justin, you want to start things off?
Sure. Haven't finished it, but I started watching Ride or Die on Netflix, which is a Japanese movie. I've been super into getting back into feeling like I'm in Japan. I don't know why. As I age and remember my younger years, and so this is one that has a lot of that. I'm watching it in Japanese as I ride my exercise bike, so that's fun. And it's a story about a woman who kills another guy's husband because he's a dick and is abusing the friend. And then they run off together, and she's a lesbian. And I know it goes somewhere interesting from there, but it's a good start. It got me intrigued. I was like, oh crap, this is a intense. It's very it goes well with a lot of my younger years of Japanese movie watching.
I was really hoping you're going to say, and then that's just the first 5 minutes.
It kind of is,
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
I think I'm only like 30 minutes into it at most at this point,
Oh
so
my
but
gosh.
I'm enjoying it, so.
That's cool. That's cool. I've been working my way through the Netflix queue, and I love the original. And so I decided I'm going to finally take that next step. I watched the remake of The Magnificent Seven from a couple of years ago with Denzel and Chris Pratt and a few other actors of note. Oh, Ethan Hawke is in it as well. It was okay. It wasn't. Didn't have the same story as the original, which was a little surprising, but I guess I can understand why they changed it. Because in the original, it was a band of Mexican bandits, and this one, it's just a robber baron who's trying to run over this town. And again, it was a good fun, really nothing too surprising. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I don't need to see it again. And it's sometimes it kind of dipped into that. Was this movie really necessary territory? But overall, yeah, I'm glad I finally got to see it. How about you, James? What have you been reading or watching
Well, you
lately?
know what you're talking about, like remakes, they should remake 12 Angry Men, 12 Angry Trans.
That's one way to do it.
I think so. Someone could just run with that, make it brilliant. I haven't been watching too much, but I got addicted somehow to Chicago PD. Why? A good friend of mine is the production sound mixer, and he's always posting stuff about how cold it is there and what they're doing. And I realized that I got sick and tired of these characters. This particular season, I'm just over it. That's it.
Wow. Okay. So that's isn't it there aren't there like three Chicago sets TV? So I
Exactly.
know there's PD, Chicago Fire, and I guess there's another one, maybe Chicago Medical or something like
Yeah,
that.
Chicago Med. And I haven't
Med.
seen those, so I don't know. It's all about the relationships and the pretty people and who they're sleeping with and who they're going to adopt a child with, or, and it gets into drama and,
Right.
And I don't know. I just realized that, like, this is just going to continue the way they're continuing. And it's,
Wow. So, and they actually filmed, it's actually produced in Chicago.
yeah,
Oh,
at least
wow.
Chicago PD is, yeah.
Yeah, well, that explains the very cold aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. Okay, so James, so let's start talking about you. So you said Renaissance earlier was a kind of a was a key word for you. What do you mean
Yeah,
by
it
that?
was. Well, because that starts at the beginning, which is in 11th grade, I was my brother. I have a twin brother, and he was like, he went to the Renaissance Fair, and he kind of told me about it, and I didn't put much heed into it, but I started juggling that year, learning how to juggle, and that was because of a certain school I went to and some performers that came to the school who juggled and rope walked. So I wanted to learn how to rope walk, and in between I learned how to juggle. Anyway, so as I got more into juggling and juggling, I wanted to make it comedic. So that's really the birth of my writing. Was how can I write some comedy juggling? And my first gig was at the Renaissance Fair. So the LA Renaissance Fair had these workshops before you get in. And I don't know how I exactly really got connected, but I got accepted to work there as a juggler. And they had workshops about character and all this stuff. And, you know, one of the guys there, Dennis, who was an old Disney child actor from the original Disney Club show, he told me, you know, be a baker's assistant and that's your character and you're juggling, you know, loaves of bread and stuff. And it was ridiculous, but it started me on the road of writing comedy for juggling. And then I did Renaissance fairs around the country and I started getting really a lewd show, a very lewd comedy show, because Renaissance fairs are, you know, they're bawdy. And if you want to attract a crowd and try to get as much tips as you can, you know, you gotta do it, you know, whatever it is, you know, yelling free beer so you can attract a crowd, you know. And then,
So you incorporated you came up with your would snappy patter be the way to put it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have any examples of some of the kind of things you would say?
Oh God.
I know it's a while ago.
So long ago. I changed careers every 20 years, like in a big way, you know. And for instance, from the juggling and the comedy, I went straight to stand up and I was at the what are the two big places in LA are the Comedy Store and what's the other one?
The Improv.
The Improv. So I was at the Improv and Mark Lanau over there was like, you know, I auditioned my juggling act to get on the TV show even at the Improv. And I was accepted and now on their waiting list. In the meantime, I'm talking to Mark and, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, I'm really getting into stand-up comedy and I'd like to audition on your stage there, the stand-up comedy to see where, if I can get a reoccurring, you know, spot here or not. So I did my comedy, pure stand-up for him. And he said, well, you know, you're right, that needs work. It needs a place, an attitude where you're coming from. And so I can't have you do the stand-up on the TV show, but you can do your juggling. And anyway, you know, nothing much happened of that. But I did do stand-up and I got to headline status at some comedy clubs around the country. And I would, of course, you know, do my juggling, begin with the juggling and then do the stand up until I started feeling it was getting weak and then go grab some more props and continue with the act. And then I started writing scripts. So when that happened, you know, I was doing cruise ships, for instance, and I would have plenty of time to write screenplays. While life on the ocean.
Yeah, I was just about to ask how you made that transition from stand-up to starting to write scripts. I mean, did other comics come to you to write for them as well? Or was it just kind of like you focused on you and then you just kind of like, hey, as you said, you've got all this time. I think I can make a short out of this. I can make a feature out of this.
Well, actually, it came more from reading plays and being in an actor in plays and musicals. You know, I did everything. Because I was so ambitious and I would spend all my time. When I was juggling, I was practicing 8 or 12 hours a day, you know, unicycles, rope walking, juggling, writing comedy. And then I went to acting and dancing. I was like, I took dance like crazy and did all of these musicals. I played Riff in West Side Story. I played Snoopy in the musical Snoopy. And so I worked it. I was always working it, you know, big ambition, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that stand-ups were getting TV shows and they were writing and they had a point of view, then I started writing and took classes in writing, you know, various places, community colleges, mostly Santa Monica or Valley College. And then as I was doing my juggling act, which got stronger and stronger, and like I said, I was traveling around the world, it started to plateau because I couldn't get those big TV shows like Johnny Carson, like some of my contemporaries did. You know, I used to work with Penn and Teller at Renaissance festivals, you know, people like this who went on to be, you know, huge things, the Karamazov brothers. So these were my contemporaries, but I was like a, you know, they were older than me and they were, you know, had more established of a repertoire and a attitude and an act, you know. I mean, I had an act, but I mean, I just wasn't getting the bigger shows to propel my career. So my brother said, why don't you go back to college, you know, refresh yourself with something. And I found Valley College had a total film classes, you know, and a program. So I went through there, and from there I went into being a boom operator on a movie, you know, and I was like, I'm on set, I'm boom operating for the first time. I had a little practice with it, and it was fantastic. And I also got a job at AFI doing an assistant editorial because I had learned editing. And so I was doing both these things, but I loved the set life. I didn't like being in a room with an editor not knowing when we were going to do lunch. You know, it kind of came down to that. So then I had a 20-year career doing production sound mixing. And I, you know, I won a Emmy certificate for sound mixing. And, you know, but that career plateaued too. In the meantime, as I got into sound mixing, I met a producer who worked with the fantastic sound mixer, Willie Burton, who does all top things. And he had a production company I had a script at, and it got first looks at three different companies that had first look deals with Disney. And it was called DC Dog, and it was a great boy and his dog story. And it went to these companies, and we thought we had something going with one particular company when the marketing department said, hey, we want to talk to you about this script you gave to it, you know, had us consider. And then the writing strike happened, and that was like 8 months of writing strike, and nothing ever happened when it ended. So, and I even pitched Steven Spielberg on my DC Dog script. I accosted him at Matador Beach one day, him and his family. And are you still there?
Oh no, still here. So, because I was just about to say, how did that come about? But yeah. And how did that go?
Well, I tell you, I was at the beach. He was walking, you know, away with his family, but he was off to the side of his family, and so, you know, and I had my shirt off. I was in trunks, you know, and I went up to him and I said, hey, you know, basically said, my introduction was, hey, you can tell by my suntan, you know, I was totally white, that I'm a writer. You know, and so he kind of chuckled like you did, you know,
right.
And I felt my opening. So I gave him, you know, this pitch for DC Dog. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, send it to me in the mail. Seriously, I'll take a look at it, you know. And I'm like, I even told him, I said, oh, okay, I get it. You're with your family. You know, I'm sorry. I know if I send it, you're not going to unsolicited. It'll never make it to you. And he said, no, go ahead, send it. And I said, okay, thank you. And, you know, I never sent it because I knew it would never get there.
Oh. But you could have had it. You never know.
Never know.
Yeah, but no, seriously, you cannot put Steven Spielberg, Universal Studios or wherever, and it's going to get through.
That's true. Yeah, you can't like put like, he asked for this. He asked me to send this.
Right. Remember Matador Beach. You know?
Remember the pasty white guy?
July 12th.
Probably. But that's how a lot of the like literary agents are in the book side, is like they won't look at anything. But if you mentioned in the email, hey, I met you at this conference, you said to email you, they have like their assistants looking for those, and then they send them through. So
this was before email. This was 25 years ago, 30 yeah. years ago.
Whew. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm old. Anyway, awesome. Yeah, it was great, and nothing happened. And so during this 20 years or 22 years of sound mixing, of course, I was meeting people, I was writing, I was taking classes, and really, and I was marathon running, which was another thing. Like, if I get into something, I get into it. So I ran 6 marathons, and I actually won one.
Wow.
I was training like crazy. And so one day I said to myself, I'm not training anymore. I'm going to just write. I don't care what my sound business happens. I still get calls, you know, and I'll do that, but I'm just going to tackle this. And the Austin film thing, I had 2 scripts in there, and I got up to second rounders with 2 scripts. And because of that kind of marketing aspect, I pitched it and got like over 100 people wanting either, you know, both of these scripts, producers. So nothing came of that. And I still hammered away. I did, you know, every genre I wrote, which I know is kind of a mistake, but I just kept going and kept trying to get something going. So, and in fact, I had 2 TV series pilots, originals in development. I had 3 horror scripts in line for funding. And even this was like happening even during COVID. And out of the 3 scripts, the producer was going to have me fly to New York to direct one of them. So, you know, everything was going really, really well. And suddenly, out of this slate of 10, my 3 wasn't going to go anywhere because their COVID costs had risen so much that they decided not to continue with their slate of horror films. So this made me go, okay, you know, I'm tired of this. You know, I can't do this. So I'm going to write micro budget feature scripts that I can film in my house. And 3 years ago, I had a script that I was going to do because I was going to use my house and my mom's house because I had written it for these 2 locations and for a bunch of cars, you know, car work, which I have 2 different cars I was going to use written into the script. And I had Sally Kirkland really interested, who's a Golden Globe lead actress award winner, you know, and that just fell apart, you know. And
oh, man.
So with that also, I said micro budget. So now I'm writing micro budgets, and I filmed 1 already. It's in the can. I just need to finish editing and do all the post. And I've written another one. That's a quirky, a raunchy dark comedy called Siblings. And I've been blasting that on Facebook and other places. And, you know, I had Jeffrey Weissman in a role as the dad, and a bunch of other people, Whitten Frank, who's a really great actress, and, Gayla Johnson, who's a great stand-up and has been on a whole bunch of TV shows. And now I have my second one, which is coming of age drama. And I'm casting that right now, and I have some really good people I'm looking at, and I'm gonna film that basically in my house, except for one or 2 scenes at a farm, you know, with some horses, and 1 or 2 scenes at a in a supermarket, which, you know, now I'm going outside the web of micro budget, and I'll have to spend probably $1,000 or so to get these places to film, but I might have 1 place for free, so I'll see.
Well, that's cool. That's one of the things I did want to ask you about, especially writing for a micro budget feature that you are planning to make yourself. Now, do you kind of write it from a producer's perspective that you kind of think, okay, I want to do this scene, but you know, this is what has to happen in the scene. And ideally it would be in this one place, but that would be too expensive. Do you kind of think, okay, how can I do this so I could film it, you know, in the house or in the backyard or, you know, use somebody's office hallway type of thing?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've decided that I would, you know, best look at personal things that have happened to me, you know. So Siblings is about a, you know, Thanksgiving dinner with 5 siblings and dad and his girlfriend, and another character comes in later. So I said to myself, you know, if it's about me, my family, I know them, I can create something about that. And if it's a Thanksgiving dinner, that's at a house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it follows, if I do it in real time or almost real time, that's it. I can do that. So I wrote that. The second one, coming of age, started out as some really personal issues with me in high school, having a first girlfriend and the breakup. And that broke my heart. And I went with that. That's something I can do. And locations might be tricky. So I said to myself, you know, it has to be more. It has to be about a family too. So I incorporated that story with a child of mine who was found out to be on the spectrum. So I added that to my to my coming of age lead at 17, going to finish high school and going to college with a girlfriend and being broken up and finding out they're on the autism spectrum. So I said, okay, I can easily combine those, and that's family and that's mostly a house if I can pull it off. And so I basically did, except for I have the girlfriend, you know, him being a homebody and dealing with this autism thing, which he doesn't want to accept because he's on such a high functioning thing with it, that this main push is that the girlfriend doesn't like that he's always at home and he's scared to go out and he has social issues that he really didn't connect with being on an autism scale to begin with.
Is it tough for you to kind of develop the stories? I mean, you said that you base a lot of them on what's happened to you, excuse me, but because you're keeping the locations very limited, so I guess you're really more able to focus on the characters and the interactions between the characters. I mean, is that when you started writing, was that what's one of the things that you excelled at, or did it kind of come gradually over time as you were starting to write your own material?
Well, that is a great, great question, because I started out writing personal stuff. I have something called Where Life Begins, and I wrote it 30 years ago, 35 years ago. And this is the first thing that I ever put into a competition. I was so naive about competitions at the time. So I sent it into Kodak, had a short film script contest. It was called Aperture something. And I sent in and I got second runner up. Like, I lost to a guy in New York City. And I didn't know what that meant. You know, I was happy, but I kind of felt like my writing for this script was very personal and very small in a way, you know, not a huge, like, hey, this is high concept, you know? So my whole writing life in screenplay world was personal and what I would call small in a way, but it almost won this contest, and I would have been able to have money and film, because this was before any kind of digital video format, 35 years ago, maybe even 40 by now. And so I used that, and I talked to Kodak, and I got like 10,000 feet of film, and I was going to try to make it until I realized how much money you really need. And I actually had Ron Perlman, because I'd worked with him as a production sound mixer in like quite a few projects. And I sent him the script to consider, you know. And this was before he hit super big with, you know, with the movies again, you know, with Mr. Redman.
You know, of course.
And so then when I went to, you know, really concentrate on screenwriting, like by taking classes and really exploring it, online classes and, you know, some classes that were almost 2 years long, you know, the master class, you know, and stuff like that. And some of Truby's classes, you know, then I realized, oh, high concept. And I started writing all these things, you know, like, you know, oh, what's the one with the death? What's his name? Oh my God, Bruce Willis. His big.
You mean like Die Hard?
Yeah, Die Hard. So okay, so I wrote Die Hard on a cruise ship, you know, and I.
Okay.
I started writing these big concepts, and then this micro budget made me go back to real personal things, and I guess I'm going through a discovery period with getting back to Where Life Begins, which really, you know, almost won the one and only contest I ever sent it in. So I feel for me that that's the way to go for right now.
Sure, sure. I mean, I have one more question about the filmmaking, then I'll throw it over to Justin. So when would you say your specialty is micro budgets? And then kind of as a follow-up to that, so how many hats do you wear on that kind of production? I mean, you're the writer and the director. It also sounds like you're doing a lot of the sound, or is that in the post-production aspect?
Yes. Well, not in post yet, but I did the production sound. I had, okay, on set, I had a boom operator. I had a DP. I had a focus puller. And I had a guy who kind of was a Grip Electric. They came camera ready. They did their own makeup when they needed it, touch-ups or whatever. We discovered wardrobe of their wardrobe. Thank God it was all one day, basically, except for one character that needed two different pieces. And I did everything else. First AD, second AD, line producer, unit production manager, set designs, on-set dresser, production designer. I did every single other thing.
Was this all for Siblings?
Yeah.
And how long was the shoot?
The shoot was 10 days.
10 days. And how many actors?
About 10 because I did a thing where I did the day of the Thanksgiving and then 2 years later where Kirk, the main sibling, talks to three kids he adopted. So that's four that I had of new people that I did one day of a huge, huge number of scenes because they were all just in the dining room. Mm-hmm. And then the first part of the shoot, I had six characters. So I guess 10 characters in all.
Okay. Yeah. I think a lot of people, when they think of like a film production, they think it's this big, expansive operation and not realizing that, sometimes when you've got a very limited budget, you kind of have to wear a lot of hats. And so you need to and try to do it as efficiently as possible.
Yeah. I mean, it was driving me a bit nuts. Seriously. I didn't eat at all on set. I was always working on what the next scene was going to be, what the next day's scene, so I could tell them to work on it. I mean, the actors were so good, it's so nice that they joined me on the journey. I mean, it was literally like, it was crazy. I mean, I was producer, I did everything. I had one person help me with casting, which was great. But aside from that, it was all me,
Wow, that is great. So, and when do you hope to have it released?
I'm hoping because I want to post both of these so I can get on board. I have some post people to talk to, but I'm hoping two feature length IMDb credits, are good to like say, hey, come help me, please. Mm-hmm. I will bring everyone up with me, and so I'm hoping to get someone to either go really cheaply or as a deferred pay situation or something.
Sure.
Yeah,
that is great stuff. That's I always love hearing about everybody's individual experiences, like how they got to where they are, and that's a great story, especially the whole have to do all of these things because you're like a one man operation. That's great. I mean, really, congrats to you for that.
It's because no one's going to help you. It's like I realize mm-hmm. if you don't do it yourself, forget about it. I can't wait on producers to look at my script and say whether they like it enough to take a chance on it. And even in development, mm-hmm. two TV series in development, I was really riding high until it just nothing happened.
Right. Well, I don't want to hog the whole conversation. So Justin, questions do you have for James?
Yeah. I wanted to go back a step and talk about the cruise ships. So writing, first of all, like the idea of writing comedy for juggling, just something that blows most people's minds, I imagine. Like you don't even think about that that's a thing until you're like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. Stand up and juggling and jugglers put on a show. Really cool. But so were you actually writing screenplays on the cruise ships? Is that what you were saying?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I had plenty of time and, laptops had come up,
Nice. So talking about the writing life part of this podcast, which is like getting to know, the writer itself too, and the experiences. Do you have any memories or cool stories or just like experiences? I think riding around on a cruise and just working on my screenplays and being able to like look out at a sunset and stuff like that would be awesome. But does any of that still stick with you or is it kind of all a blur at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I went to some like unbelievable places, especially islands off the coast of Africa. That were amazing, like Aldabra, which is just tortoises, the big land tortoises. Oh, and wow. That's the only reason that island exists. No one lives on it but the caretakers. And stuff like that. But it didn't really inform my writing, except for the fact that I was on the Achille Lauro for quite a time. And I was on there for like two seasons with South African crew. And I even got married, not on the ship, but we had, I met a South African woman and brought her on the ship to do this whole season of like 4 or 5 months. And we had our anniversary, when I asked her to marry me, we had a whole big party on there, and she, you know, she accepted and all that stuff, and an engagement party, you know, after the fact. Yeah. And it was really fun. And then like virtually the next season, it was in the news because off the wild coast of Africa are these really rough waters, and it sunk.
Oh, wow.
And the crew staff that I had worked with, the best man at my wedding, who was a South African comedy magician, you know, and another musician guy that I knew, him and his wife were there, and they basically saved the passengers. They were the guys, because the, you know, all the crew and the captain took the first boats out.
Yeah, man.
And I was going to try to write that screenplay, but because one of the guys, the musician, was trying to get TV interested in making it a TV show, and it didn't work. And I was going to, you know, what a great, you know, the entertainment staff saved the passengers is a great story.
Yeah, it's like some kind of comedy meets Titanic, you know, it's like.
Right. So that would have been a great project that came out of it. And my diehard on a cruise ship used all my knowledge of being on cruise ships.
Oh, sure. You know, I'm sure there's still something you can do there. Maybe not quite Die Hard, but something else, you know.
Yeah.
Harry Potter on a cruise ship. There we go.
There you go.
Micro budget version. Yeah. No, that's cool. So what about like all the comedy stuff that's gone in? Do you feel like you are now branded one way or the other? I was looking through some of your projects, and it doesn't feel like you really are pigeonholed in any way, right? Or how would you classify yourself?
No, and that's what I wanted to do with the micro budgets. Like one, it was that raunchy comedy. So that would be truer to where I should be pigeonholed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you listen to people and they all say, you know, you got to go after what, you know, pick one genre and go. And that's another thing that I'm just saying, well, you know, screw you. If I'm going to make my own movies and I'm going to get the money together and I'm going to scramble, you know, 24/7 to make it possible with the limited amount of money I have, I'm terrible at crowdfunding, and make them, then I'm gonna make, you know, what I make. So comedy one, second, coming of age, because it has elements that really affected my life, these big emotional scenes that I went through, and I'm gonna write them. And then the third one is a total horror film. And that's the third one I'm gonna do micro budget. I'm writing it, it's called The Shack. And I'm writing it because I have this awful looking shack in my backyard, in the corner of the backyard. And I have people I know who can play this monster type, and a good friend of mine who's an extremely good actor who can play, you know, the guy who lives in the house and how certain people die because of certain things. You know, I don't want to get into the whole story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to have three different genres to put on the festival circuit and try to sell. And these are all going to be SAG micro budget contracts, which means I can use SAG actors, and I am using really good SAG actors.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so then the hope is that you'll get attention. Are you doing anything else or planning any other steps to make sure you get attention other than just like hoping that they get recognized? Is that on the radar?
Certainly. Oh my goodness. Like, you know, just the other day I ran through Hollywood naked as a street trying to get some sort of, that didn't work quite
well. That never hurts.
I got a lot of laughs, but nothing else.
If anything, it can give you some stories.
Well, yeah. You know, what's funny is I went to Fiverr because I realized how much press people are, right? So I went to Fiverr kind of recently with the whole siblings press release thing. And this person was, I thought they were great. They had 5 stars or something, you know, and I talked to them and I go, okay, $20 is like the 100 words or something. And I went, great, let's start there and just try it. Then they convinced me, do the $70 one for 300. And I went, okay, it's not that much more. Great. And before I even could get started, they wanted me to do an extra 100 because that's the premium level, 500 words. And I'm like, you know, I want you because I can write it. I want it to be put out, you know, and that's what you write and you distribute. So we had this whole thing that was really problematic. And I remained firm with the $70 one. And admittedly, I had so many problems. I had to give them a horrible review. And they kept saying, well, what are you doing? You're trying to ruin my business. And I'm like, you haven't done anything. You keep asking for money. So anyway, I talked to the Fiverr people who are super nice. And they said, listen, you had so much trouble with this person. We want to connect you with people that we have vetted who are on Fiverr.
Yeah.
And that's great. So I'm going to go with that, you know.
Yeah, I got started in the ghostwriting business kind of through thanks to Fiverr. It was cool. I put some stuff on there and got pro and then just started getting a bunch of offers. And then I took some jobs after that, so I don't have time anymore. But I am a fan of Fiverr in some ways. I also see that there could be some, like you said, people who are less than stellar in terms of the quality or lack of work.
Right.
But no, that's cool. Yeah. So you're going about some other ways to get exposure and whatnot. So that's exciting.
Yeah. And that's great. You have so much success there. That's really, they were so nice. I couldn't believe that they were emailing me, you know, real personal messages about, you know, my problems with this person.
Yeah. We actually had a interview on here with somebody who had done quite well on Fiverr and I think was going full time on just Fiverr. So I'll have to link that and re-mention it. But yeah, I think we're coming up close to the end of our time. We don't want to take your whole day. So do you have any advice for people? Like I've often thought about going out there and just starting to shoot some stuff. I did a short a long time ago and it was a good lesson learned, but what are some main lessons learned that you're like, oh man, if I was going to tell my best buddy how to start this, I'd be like, this is what you got to think about. Or don't forget to do this, or don't be stupid and do what I did. Anything like that you want to share with
us? Right. You know, if you're young, you know, do it. It's like, you can't depend on people. And you can't wait on people. I mean, like that's the bigger game. But I mean, if you sit around for 30 years like I did, you know, with trying to make things happen to be the writer director that I always wanted to be, and it's like you have to grab it. And one thing is that, you know, I did a documentary on relationships, and because I'm me, it came out to be very funny and in certain aspects. And my producing partner was this great guy I've known forever because he started out as a juggler as well. And he's a very intelligent guy, Joshua Townsend, who does Notes on Your Notes. And he's really intelligent. And before Notes on Your Notes, you know, again, 30 years ago, we did this documentary and he had it open up a film festival. Like, I couldn't even believe it. Like, how did you do that? And it was about a 34 minute short, as I recall. And it opened up this film festival and we never did anything else with it. You know, like, I don't know what I was thinking, that we didn't do another one or try to get another festivals, but we just didn't. We had a DVD of it because at the time those are how you sold them. And, you know, it sold like 30 or 40 copies or maybe 50, I don't know, but that was it. So If I could have gone back to that time and said to Joshua, you know, let's really do more. We have to. And that would have snowballed obviously into narrative because that's the only thing I was really writing at the time. And so my advice is just do it any way you can. And, you know, try to get some expertise, try to hit YouTube for all the videos to learn things from. But I think your biggest growth is going to come from doing it and not sitting around waiting for others to make your career.
Awesome. There you go. Paul, any last questions?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I like I said, I love hearing these kinds of stories. I mean, it sounds like you kind of like you get inspired by something that you experience and it makes you want to do it more, want to learn how to do it as best as you can. And it's like, you just kept doing it more and more, and the juggling and then the sound editing and then the writing and then the filmmaking. I mean, it's just like, there's no stopping you.
I know, it's like I'm at 64 years old. Sorry to say that. Geez, I hate admitting that because there's ageism. But at 64 years old, I've been vegetarian most of my life, you know, or at least a good, three-fourths. And I plan to be around, and I'm starting a whole nother career. Really, basically, I'm starting another career at 64.
That's great. That is fantastic. James, where can people find you online?
I do have jamesridgeleyfilms.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I have a GoFundMe for siblings, which I was poor at. It's GoFundMe, and it's siblings with an exclamation mark. And I would love if anyone could do $1, $5. I mean, it's crazy how it just stopped with my initial, push. And, it's for 15 grand, which I could make the whole thing and post and hope to get to some festivals, and that's GoFundMe,
Okay, that is great. We'll try to include a link to that, at least when this goes up.
Okay, great. I can certainly supply you with links of that and my film website.
Sounds great. JamesRidgeleyFilms.com. Fantastic. James, thank you so much for being on the show today. This was really, really entertaining and informative.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. It's been so long. I've seen you on Facebook and interacted, and here we are finally.
Finally. Cool. Very good stuff.
All right. Awesome. Thanks again, James. I appreciate it.
Yes. And cool. Good luck with your writing career too, both of you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you very
Looking
much.
Looking forward to Austin Film Festival next week. People probably hear this like around the time that it's happening or right after, but
probably.
they are great people. They're really, really kind people.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Well, James, make sure you go check out James' films when they pop. If you have money to help him make even better films and amazing big budget films, I'm sure he'll appreciate that. And also always please leave reviews, spread the word of mouth of the podcast. And thank you. I'm Justin Sloan. You can find my books on Amazon.
I'm Paul Zeidman. You can check out my screenwriting blog, Maximum Z. It's MaximumZ.blog. I'm also on Twitter at Maximum_Z. Like he said, I also forgot. I got books on Amazon. Go buy them, please. Like he said, he's Justin. He's James. I'm Paul. This has been the Creative Writing Life podcast. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Most importantly, go write something.